on a Monday. You're with us for the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Thanks for being here. Let's start with a visit with State Senator Rob Coles. He's a Republican from Green Bay, and he's represented the 2nd District since 1987, communities stretching from the Fox Valley to Shawano County. And he's authored or sponsored more than 30 bills this year. We'll take a look at a handful of them, starting with lead pipes in schools. The most recent state data is from 2016. There are more than 4,300 Wisconsin kids under age 6 who have elevated levels of lead. And earlier this year, a report gave our state an F grade for not preventing lead pipes in school drinking water. Are you concerned about lead pipes in your child's school or elsewhere in your community? How should lawmakers respond to lead pipes in schools? What do you want to have happen? What questions do you have for State Senator Rob Coles? 800-642-1234 is the number to join in. State Senator Coles, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Well, good morning, Kate, and good morning to your listeners.
So this summer, you announced two bills that would require lead testing for drinking water at schools and other places where children congregate, like daycares, summer camps. Wisconsin has more than 2,000 public schools. Why is testing needed across the board?
Testing is needed because the data shows very clearly that lead affects on young kids, 6 and under. It's very deleterious. It's bad for any of us, but it's particularly bad for kids.
Have we seen enough problems or concerns in your district to warrant expanding tests statewide?
Well, we have not had people reach out to us directly, but since there is no required test and no data on how many schools have actually dealt with this and taken bad lead lines off, you know, if it hit the federal standard of 15 parts per billion, we don't have good data. We think that some schools have dealt with it, but I'm also fairly sure that a whole bunch of schools have not dealt with it. So this bill is heavily targeted, obviously, you know, daycares, grade schools, to protect those most vulnerable kids. If we can get this thing signed, I think parents will feel much better about sending their kids off, because this whole issue of lead has exploded in the public arena in recent years. Now, we passed a bill last session to allow municipalities to move forward if they pass an ordinance and get approved by the Public Service Commission, and 3 or 4 cities have already utilized that legislation. But now this bill would be more heavily targeted to really go after the most vulnerable.
Do you know how much this would cost to do testing straight across the board and take stock of what's going on in our state?
Well, we believe the tests are about $50 per test. It could be a little bit less. And the way the bill is drafted right now, if the, let's say, a water fountain showed that it was 15 parts per billion, which is a federal threshold that's recommended to not use it if it's that level, the legislation would say you could take that water fountain offline and you just have to show you're providing some water for the kids somewhere else. So it wouldn't require them to rebuild the way it's drafted right now each individual site. So if the fountains, bubblers in Wisconsin, are okay, those would continue, obviously, but the ones that are that 15 parts per billion, those would have to be taken offline. So we're working with the school boards association, school district administrators association, to make this happen. And I think it's very important to do this, because there's for sure that there are schools out there. Do we know exactly how many? No, we don't. But if we can get this into law, we'll find out exactly how many have actually dealt with it.
We're talking with State Senator Rob Coles from Green Bay about legislation he's had a hand in this year. Are you one of his constituents or another Wisconsin voter? What do you think about the state's response to lead pipes in schools or sexual assault evidence, Lyme disease, or government waste? What do you think about what lawmakers should be addressing right now? Join in at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. State Senator, in May, you introduced Senate Bill 212, which would waive annual admission fees to state parks for parents of school children enrolled in fourth grade. Why do you support this waiver, considering the DNR estimates it would cost $250,000 in lost revenue from park admissions?
Well, and we replace it with general purpose revenue. The federal government does this, Kate. It waives it for this grade, and in talking with parents that have kids at this age, and they felt that this would be a good way to incentivize young people to take an interest in our parks. You know, the parks are a special interest of mine. I love our state parks, and I go to several of them every month. And I want to see the kids of our state enjoy our state parks. And that's one of the reasons I'm so involved in protecting the water quality in state parks and getting the water infrastructure repaired. That was another bill that we've worked on. And we have a follow-up bill, again, this session. But getting our kids outside, it's good for them. You want them to have exercise. You want them to enjoy the outdoors. We have some 70 state parks.
And it's very similar to an assembly bill back in 2015. How have we seen this proposal come up before?
I don't recall that bill, Kate.
Okay. You also introduced a bill this year that would require Wisconsin's tax collection agency, the Revenue Department, to create a website showing how much taxes are collected and how that money is spent. Why do you think there is a need for this website?
Accountability. Now, I've been the chairman of the audit committee for a while, and we find all sorts of interesting things when we dig deep into individual programs and issues. But if an individual person wants to find out exactly how money is spent on different programs and they want to go online, and that's the world we're in right now, it's online, it's very difficult to access that information. So this would be discontinuing what I hope would be accountability in state government so people can find out how much is spent in some place and then ask questions why. Now, this bill is not moving at the moment. We're hoping that it does move, but it's just all part of transparency and accountability in state government.
How is this similar or different from Open Book Wisconsin, the website Governor Walker launched 5 years ago? Now that website has Governor Evers' signature on the front page. Does that website not provide enough detail?
That's right. It doesn't provide enough detail to actually make it accessible for people. And so we've looked at it and we've made the decision that it's just too hard to negotiate that website. So we need to do it a little bit better. Now, we've been working with the Department of Revenue on this. We think that they're okay with this, and I'm reasonably optimistic that this will happen eventually.
We're talking with State Senator Rob Coles. He's a Republican from Green Bay. Do you live in Green Bay, the Fox Valley, Shawano County, or another county that Senator Rob Coles represents? What questions do you have for him? What do you think about efforts to address Lyme disease from tick bites in our state? Should lawmakers take action? You have a line to Senator Coles at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Tweet us, WPR Mornings. We'll get back to this conversation, maybe hear from you in just a moment. Stay with us on the Ideas Network. You're with us for the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and we're talking with Republican State Senator Rob Coles of Green Bay. He's authored or sponsored more than 30 bills this year. We're talking about some of them with your insights along the way. 800-642-1234. What questions do you have about our state government or the legislature? Where would you like to see the state conducting more audits of state programs or spending? What do you think about efforts to address Lyme disease? join in. You can also email ideas at WPR.org, and Senator Coles stays with us. Let's go to the phones now with Patrick joining us from Richland Center. Good morning, Patrick.
Hey, good morning, and very good show. Thank you for being on the air, Mr. Cole.
Good morning, Patrick.
Yes, can we expect any more legislation from the Republicans taking away local control, you know, particularly on water, like, you know, took away our local control regulating high-capacity wells and, you know, the water resource is one of our most precious, and some of you guys' votes in the past almost look like you thought the water was too clean. But are we going to be better on that?
I think the package of bills that should be coming relatively soon from the Speaker's task force, and some of them we've worked on separately and some of them we've worked on with different members of the task force, I'm pretty optimistic there's going to be 5 to 10 pieces of legislation, and none of these would, to the best of my knowledge, would be taking away any local control. It would be enhancing the state's effort to work on our clean water. You know, whether it's, you know, something on nitrates, you know, producer watershed grants that would affect farms, the parks bill, which I mentioned in the previous segment. There's going to be a whole bunch of water-related bills, but to the best of my knowledge, nothing that would take away local control.
Patrick, thanks for the call. Let's look at sexual assault kits for a moment and the Senate bill that would codify how the state stores evidence in sexual assault cases. Wisconsin currently holds rape kits for up to a decade. Just in case victims want to have that evidence to test for DNA. Another bill this year from your colleague, Senator Andre Jacques, proposes extending the storage limit to 50 years. What do you think of that proposal?
I have not really looked at that proposal. Right now we're just trying to get a hearing on the first proposal, which is very much bipartisan, to have, you know, better surveillance of where the kits are, how they're reported to the state, at every step of the process, so we don't lose track of a kit that could end up solving a crime. So hopefully that bill, which will put into law all sorts of requirements at every step of the way and put some money into it to make this thing work better, hopefully that bill gets moving, and it's possible the 10 years is not adequate, and through the public testimony we extend it, but at this point we're just trying to get a hearing on the concept. And we've been working with, you know, a bipartisan coalition of legislators and the Attorney General to make this happen. I think we've all seen where a rape kit that's going back a few years that suddenly been looked at, and it's helpful in solving a crime, and we want to make sure we can solve more crimes using the rape kits.
Well, let's move on to Lyme disease bills. You introduced a package of bills this year that's aimed at curbing Lyme disease from tick bites, and the DNR would take on a bigger role in addressing it. State parks and forests would be required to sell insect repellents. Why should the DNR have more of a role here in preventing Lyme disease?
Well, people when they're outdoors, there's a good chance that they may be walking in our state parks. So we need to show an example there. Some of the state parks are selling bug spray, but to the best of my knowledge, they're not putting posters up that educate people on what can happen if you don't take reasonable precautions, trying to avoid tick bites. So this package of bills is a reasonable response to what I've experienced in knowing a whole bunch of people that have been infected, some of whom have had some severe problems. So as somebody that loves our parks, I want to make sure that, you know, we're not overreacting here. We could take a reasonable response to avoid tick bites. But if we, you know, do some of these things, go on the web, create a website with more information about Lyme disease, what you can do to protect yourself, We also plan on a task force with the most knowledgeable people in the state that know about Lyme disease so they can report back to the legislature, and we'd also create a position over
an epidemiologist.
That's right. And I really think that the task force, if we can get this passed, we can get the best minds that know about this burgeoning problem across the state and report back to the legislature on what else should we do. Why am I involved in this? I've known a bunch of people, and it's if you don't catch it right away in the first few weeks, you can have some severe problems. We had a young man that came in front of the committee that I chair just last week, 13 years old. He's having trouble walking, diagnosed with Lyme disease. Now, hopefully he eventually recovers. But there's been a whole bunch of other people, and I'm not saying that everybody that gets Lyme disease has one of these afflictions, but a percentage of them are damaged, the neurological damage. So it's something to pay attention to. You can protect yourself with, clothing, brushing yourself off, just taking reasonable precautions to make sure you don't have a bite. And if you do feel that there's something wrong, the bullseye is usually an indication on your skin, or you're just not feeling well.
Take action.
You need to go out and there's an antibiotic called doxycycline that typically knocks it out in 10 days. But this whole issue of Lyme disease is not slowed down. We're getting about 3,000 plus episodes of people are diagnosed a year, and some of those people have been severely damaged. So it's something that's out there in the public arena that I want to talk about and hopefully make some progress on.
Get some legislation on. Yeah, we're talking with Republican State Senator Rob Coles of Green Bay. He's authored or sponsored dozens of bills this year. We're talking about some of them. What questions do you have? 800-642-1234. Still time for you to join in. State Senator Matt from Wausau emailed to say he's concerned about his vote. He thinks Wisconsin's ability to have fair representation has been manipulated by partisan gerrymandering. What is your take on the gerrymandering debate here in Wisconsin? Do you think the current voting laws are fair?
I really do think they are. I mean, I can tell you that the seat that I represent has been changed a couple of times. It's always made it harder. So I've not benefited. If there is something unfair, and I do not believe that there is, it certainly has not benefited me. It's made my district more sprawling and more difficult to reach. I like to meet people and network with them to the extent I can. So, the gerrymandering issue, it went to the Supreme Court, didn't make it. I really don't think nothing is going to happen in this legislature. Now, the next map that comes up after the next election, in any case, would have to be negotiated with Governor Evers and whoever's in the legislature at that time. So I don't see these seats changing a lot.
However, with the caveat, you've been in office since 1987. You're one of the state's Senate's longest-serving members. Your current term expires next year. Are you running for another 4 years in office?
Yes, I'm planning on giving it another go. I don't have any health issues. I still am quite engaged, more engaged than ever on a whole variety of issues, and I enjoy serving the people of this area.
Well, one thing, as we're short on time here, you co-chair the legislature's audit committee, which gets to review completed audits and decides new audits. The most recent one looked at the state veterans home at King. What did you learn from the audit and how we go about them?
Well, we learned lots of interesting things in the audit. And some of it's repetitive things that we might have known anyhow. But in the case of the King audit, there were problems with staffing. There were problems with maintenance. There were problems with following up with certain complaints. And I believe due to that audit, the legislature made changes. If it hadn't been for that audit, I'm not sure we would have kept the cash that had been diverted from the King home into other things. So that audit played a good role in keeping the cash in there and improving the staffing, improving the care for the people that are staying at King. That's just one example of many, many audits that have been done. And our audit bureau is just renowned. It gets awards every year, and it's an incredible resource. Without the audit bureau and the fiscal bureau and our other legislative service agencies, the state legislature would have chaos. But in particular, the audit bureau, which goes in and finds out where there are problems and helps us change those things, it's really great to work with those people.
State Senator, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Kate, very much. Thanks for calling.
Rob Coles is a Republican state senator from Green Bay representing the 2nd District. State Capitol Report continues in just a moment after this news update on the Ideas Network. On a Monday, it is the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're slowing down developments, going one by one, starting with news last week that Congressman Jim Sensenbrenner will not seek another term next year. New York Times called him a Republican mainstay who found his way to the center of many of Washington's most divisive political debates. He's cast more than 23,000 votes during his 4 decades in office. A week prior to the Sensenbrenner news, it was Representative Sean Duffy who announced his resignation that's set for later this month. Do you live in either of the districts that Sensenbrenner and Duffy represent? What kind of candidate do you see taking their place? 800-642-1234 is your line to talk this out. Laurel White is Wisconsin Public Radio's state capitol reporter. She co-hosts the WPR Politics podcast. Laurel, welcome back.
Thanks for having me, Kate.
Well, let's start with the Sensenbrenner news. He represents the 5th Congressional District, which covers most of Milwaukee's northern and western suburbs. How significant is his not running next year?
So this is a really big deal for Wisconsin Republicans and something that a lot of folks have had their eye on for quite a while. You know, when somebody serves more than 4 decades in Congress, I think there was a little bit of a queue forming for people thinking about maybe running for this race when Sensenbrenner did decide to step down. Sensenbrenner, as you mentioned, was first elected in 1978. He served 21 terms. And in addition to sort of this this long period of time where people could think about the seat, the potential of running for his seat, it's also a Republican stronghold in Wisconsin. It's kind of the heart of Wisconsin's Republican Party. And a lot of really powerful Wisconsin Republicans have come from this region. People like former Governor Walker, U.S. Senate candidates, our state Senate Majority Leader Scott Fitzgerald. So not only has there been a lot of time to think about it, there's a really deep bench in this part of the state for the party.
And Representative Sensenbrenner said that when he started his public service in the late 60s, that he would know when it was time to step back. And now was that time. What do we know beyond that reason? Did he say why he thinks it's time?
He just said, you know, this is he felt like he had served the district. It felt right to him. He is 76 years old. He's been serving for more than 40 years. So I think it was just in this case a matter of just kind of reaching that retirement stage and feeling like this was the right step for him.
So as journalists, we always try to find those career highlights, those mm-hmm. gems that we want to hone in on. One of those is that he played a really big role in the drafting and the passage of the Patriot Act after the September 11th attacks. What is his legacy there?
So, he did play a really key role in passing the Patriot Act after 9/11. He was one of the lead authors on that bill. In addition to that, he also has really kind of distinguished himself in a couple other areas. I think a lot of people think about Sensenbrenner when they talk about immigration issues, especially in the past several years. He has been a really outspoken Republican voice in the immigration debate. He's really pro enforcement in terms of immigration. So he emphasizes things like border security and criminal penalties for illegal immigration and actually sanctions against employers who hire undocumented immigrants. So he's been a really prominent voice for the party in that debate. Another kind of thing that stands out in his tenure, of course, there are hundreds of things over 40 years, but he was also a really key person kind of at the forefront of the Clinton impeachment. Mm-hmm. So if you're looking for kind of those career highlights. I think that should definitely be mentioned as well.
And so talk naturally goes to who might run to replace Sensenbrenner. You said there's been a long queue for a while. Waukesha County Executive Paul Farrow is one of those potential candidates, and he had this to say about the race.
There have been conversations whenever Congressman Sensenbrenner was finally going to step aside. It was going to be a big race.
All right, so who is potentially going to be in this big race, Laurel?
So we have, I'm going to take a deep breath.
Breathe.
So we have quite a few. In addition to Mr. Farrow, Paul Farrow, who's the Waukesha County Executive, we have a couple of folks that people who have been following politics for a while, I'm sure, are very familiar with. Two former U.S. Senate candidates, Senate candidate Leah Vukmir, who was actually the Republican nominee for the U.S. Senate race. She lost to Tammy Baldwin in the general election last year. Vukmir was a state senator for quite a while before she ran for that race. And then before that, she was served in the state assembly. So Wisconsin Republicans are very familiar with her and her work. Speaking of the state Senate Majority Leader Scott Fitzgerald has also said he's very interested. I believe he said he was heavily weighing a decision to jump into the race.
So what would it mean if the Senate Majority Leader would step in the race?
Well, that would be a really huge kind of shift for Wisconsin Republicans in the legislature. I think it would be kind of a domino effect. So if Senator Fitzgerald chose to run for the race to get into the race, he would have to leave his seat. That's a real key difference between the Sensenbrenner election and the Duffy election. Someone could run in the special election seat. They wouldn't have to vacate their state legislative seat to do so. So if Senator Fitzgerald left, that would obviously create a leadership vacuum where kind of people move up the line or someone who's not currently in leadership could potentially shift into those roles. Those seats are empty. We have elections coming. So obviously it causes some ripple effect when just a rank and file member of the legislature chooses to step aside and run for a different office. But when it's a leadership role, that's a whole nother ballgame.
We're going to get to Congressman Sean Duffy in a moment, but Governor Scott Walker in recent days told WISN-TV that his son Matt is interested in the seat.
Well, he's had a number of people reach out to him. I think in particular, what intrigues him is he feels frustrated that AOC somehow nationally is reflective of his generation. He's 25, and he feels like there needs to be a countervoice to that.
So AOC is referring to Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez of New York, who is often referred to by her initials. What should we make of a Matt Walker?
Well, Matt Walker obviously has a very strong potential endorsement in his father. The former governor has a lot of credibility, a lot of support within the state Republican Party. So having someone like the former governor kind of standing behind you in a race like this would be really huge for Matt Walker. I think Matt Walker also, in addition to his youth, he kind of has that, never served in public office before, sort of that outsider angle that we know has been very successful for Republicans in the past. We think about somebody like Ron Johnson, obviously not 25 years old, but somebody who sort of pitched the I haven't held elected office when he first ran, business person and outsider. And that seems to resonate with Republican voters in recent years.
We're talking with Laurel White. She's WPR State Capitol reporter. You can join in. Are you a constituent of Congressman Sensenbrenner or Congressman Duffy? What issues are the most important in your district that you'll be considering as candidates emerge, as they line up for these seats? How do you think that their leaving could shape the 2020 presidential race? Do you see a political advantage? Join in at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Laura, let's move on to Republican Sean Duffy, who announced late last month that he would be resigning later this month. He represents the 7th District, the state's largest district covering northwestern and central Wisconsin. What do we know about his reasons for leaving?
So Duffy's reasons are very different from Congressman Sensenbrenner. Duffy is much younger, much earlier in his congressional career. I think this came as a pretty big surprise for a lot of folks that follow Wisconsin politics, even Republican Party insiders. I think we're pretty shocked by this. Duffy said that he's stepping down because he and his wife are having their 9th child. soon. I believe October is when the child is due, and it has been diagnosed with some heart disease problems. So it's going to be a high needs baby, and he decided it was time for his family, for him to be a little bit closer to home, not doing the commute between Wisconsin and D.C.
Well, thinking ahead to that race to fill his seat, leaders from both parties said the agricultural and trade policy would be major voting issues in that district. How do you see the issues shaping the election?
I think that's really going to be huge. I think that's the primary issue that a lot of folks are pointing to as really the pillar, or you know, the key pillar of Republicans' campaign against President Trump, sort of focusing on the struggles that the Wisconsin dairy industry in particular has been facing over the past several years, some challenges that the ag industry has been facing in terms of reduced exports because of trade agreements, lowering prices. Obviously, the agriculture community has faced some challenges because of severe weather events as well. So talking about how government can step in and provide support in those instances. I think we're clearly seeing a theme from Democrats that this is an issue that they think they can win on with the president, so they're really hammering on it. And I think that because Duffy's district is so heavily rural and a strong representation of Wisconsin's agriculture community, we're going to see that debate play out in a really big way in that race.
Okay, so when would a special election be held for Duffy's seat?
Well, that's really the million-dollar question right now. We know that the governor can't call the special election to fill Duffy's seat until Duffy officially resigns on September 23rd. So we've got a little bit of time before the earliest possible date that the governor can announce that. I think some folks are watching that announcement particularly closely, because there is some speculation that if that special election lines up with the current primary and general election schedule for the Democratic presidential primary, that could really benefit the Democratic candidate in that race just because of strong turnout to vote for the party's presidential candidates. Governor Evers has said that he isn't thinking about that. He's not looking at it through a political lens. He's not thinking about what would be good for one party or another. He just wants to call the election as quickly as possible and get somebody in the seat to represent Wisconsinites. So we're definitely going to keep a close eye on that over the next month or so and see what plays out.
Breaking down developments in the halls of the Capitol with our state Capitol reporter Laurel White, who gets us up to speed most Mondays. Republican state lawmakers and Attorney General Josh Call are at odds over how settlements involving the state are handled. Do you think the AG should be able to settle matters without the approval of lawmakers? Do you think the laws limiting the powers of his office are beneficial or detrimental in this case? There's room for your voice, 800-642-1234. We'll be back with more State Cap in a moment here on the Ideas Network. We're looking at the powers of the State Justice Department on this issue of the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Under Republican laws passed during a lame duck session in December, Attorney General Josh Call is required to seek the Budget Committee's approval to reach settlement agreements in certain cases. And recently, Joint Finance Committee, they couldn't decide on a confidential process for reviewing and approving the agreements. So do you think the Attorney General should be able to settle matters without the approval of lawmakers? Do you think the lame duck law was effective here? What questions do you have on this process? We're at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. And WPR State Capitol reporter Laurel White stays with us. So, Laurel, looking at the Attorney General, Josh Call, and how this is going with Republican lawmakers currently at odds over how to handle these legal settlements involving the state, can you take us to the heart of this tension?
Mm-hmm. So really when this began was back in December when Republicans held the lame duck legislative session that passed a number of restrictions on powers of both the governor and the Attorney General. I think that some of the marquee things in the discussion of that were the limits and the powers of the governor in particular, but there were certainly things that rolled back what the attorney general could do under previous administrations to what Attorney General Call can do now. And one of those things is seeking approval from the Joint Finance Committee to settle lawsuits involving the state. Democratic lawmakers back then, as they opposed everything in the lame duck session, said that requirement just isn't going to work. That process isn't going to hold up. We have learned in the past couple weeks that lawmakers who lead the Joint Finance Committee and the Attorney General have really been going back and forth for several months about how to create a policy where they can discuss these lawsuits in a way that meets the confidentiality needs of non-disclosure agreements that are often involved in these settlement cases, and the sort of transparency and information sharing that lawmakers want to feel like they can make an informed decision to either give their blessing or push back on potential settlements that the Attorney General is seeking. So what has happened here in the past couple weeks that shed light on that months-long conflict is the Attorney General actually called the committee in to meet on a matter that he said, or his office said, was of tremendous importance to the state. We never learned the identity of that particular lawsuit. We never got to that stage because these confidentiality talks really kind of hit a brick wall. That, interestingly, in the twists and turns of that story, that case completely went away. That deadline went away. But there have since been several other cases that the committee has attempted to meet to talk about, and they just can't seem to get past this roadblock, this confidentiality roadblock.
Well, let's take a call now. Steve joining us from Sun Prairie on this. Steve, what do you see?
Yeah, you know, I think it's pretty obvious the Republicans are playing politics in the lame duck session. I don't think anyone disputes that. But from a common sense perspective, they're in charge of the purse of the state, so they should have a say in terms of when something should be settled or something should move forward. And from a confidentiality standpoint, does Evers have to sign that confidentiality agreement? I mean, it doesn't necessarily make sense to me why, if the attorney general is representing the state, why others in the legislature have to sign a confidentiality agreement, but Evers does not.
Steve, thanks so much. So, you know, what about the governor and where do Democrats stand on this?
So that's a really big part of the argument. Steve really articulated that well. That's something that Republicans have said in the push and pull about this, is that Governor Evers does not have to sign confidentiality agreements to get information about these pending legal settlements. The argument from Call on that matter is that the governor, because of his executive function and his executive position, has privileged authority. He represents the state, and therefore, when the lawsuit involves the state in an official capacity, he is part of the state. Whereas lawmakers in the legislature, because they are obviously in the legislative branch, not the executive branch, they don't have that sort of inherent authority and position in the lawsuit. Republicans don't really agree with that argument. They think if he's getting these briefings and this information, we should be able to get these briefings and this information.
Let's bring in Chris now from Waukesha. Chris, hi.
Hey, good morning. Great show as usual. Hey, just as a Republican, I was sad to see the politics get this far with the whole lame duck thing. It was kind of sad to see it get this far, but if people remember, it starts with Chuck Quala 20 years ago. But anyway, but of the things that were passed in the lame duck session, this is actually one of the more reasonable ones, because Democrats have used settlements to advance policy agendas on the national level, and seeing that happen on the state level would be bad. Example is environmental policy changed by settlement agreements that were confidential until they were signed off on by a judge. And then all of a sudden we have new environmental regulations. And that's not good if you don't have legislative input, because regulations are supposed to be passed by the legislature.
Chris, thanks so much for that viewpoint. And is this one of the ways that Republicans are saying, hey, you know, tied to money here, we need to get this out here?
Absolutely. Republicans want to have more say over, you know, the amount of money that's accepted in these cases, where it's deposited. They actually have already sued the attorney general. They've asked it, the case to go directly to the state Supreme Court over how settlement monies are deposited, whether they go to certain departments or, as Republicans are arguing, whether they go straight to the state's general fund. Really, the Republican argument here is they want to provide more transparency and more oversight and more accountability to Wisconsin taxpayers, because in certain cases, these can be large sums of money that come in from these lawsuits. And they say that, sure, this hasn't been a practice with previous attorneys general in Wisconsin, but they believe that the increased sort of publicity or public eye that's on this under the lame duck proposal, if it rolls out the way that they intended it to, is something that is really necessary and helpful to the state.
Well, let's move on now to WEDC. Governor Tony Evers has named a new secretary to lead the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation. That's Missy Hughes. What do we know about Missy Hughes?
So Missy Hughes was previously the chief mission officer and general counsel, for Organic Valley, a company that Wisconsinites, I'm sure, are pretty familiar with. She served in that role since 2003. She's, interestingly, the first woman to be appointed to serve as the head of WEDC. So this is a big step for the governor. I think this is interesting to note that actually another provision of the lame duck laws actually limited when Governor Evers could make this appointment. This was something that under previous administrations would have been made at the same time other cabinet appointments were made. The governor in this case had a little bit of a pumping the brakes moment. He wasn't allowed to do this until September. So I think a lot of eyes were on who he chose for this position.
As a candidate, Governor Evers had proposed to defund this WEDC or WEDC. It appears he's not doing that. So why did his plans change?
You know, that's, I think, again, a really primary theme of the lame duck session was kind of rolling back some of the controls that the governor had over WEDC, not only this executive appointment, but sort of how some of the board members are appointed. Republican lawmakers knew that Governor Evers was incredibly critical of WEDC. The organization has had several audits over the past few years that have been very harsh about some of its job tracking mechanisms, for example, how it tracks how many jobs are created after money goes out, kind of clawing back that money. The governor had been very critical of that. So I think the calculus here is sort of what he thought was going to be possible with the Republican-controlled legislature and what battles he wanted to fight. Obviously, the governor campaigned on a platform of things, and he introduced a number of those things in his state budget, including the Medicaid expansion, for example. We know that didn't get past the Republican-controlled legislature. I think this is a case in which he just kind of had to choose what he was going to push. And the reality of abolishing WEDC with the current legislative structure in Wisconsin, I just don't think was doable for him.
Laurel, thanks as always. Thanks for joining us.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Laurel White is Wisconsin Public Radio's state capitol reporter, and she's part of the WPR Politics podcast. Just ahead, most people who are eligible for lung cancer screenings last year didn't get the correct one. We'll talk about barriers to getting tested. I'm Kate Archer Kent. This is the state capitol report on the morning show. You're listening to the Ideas Network.